Good evening. This is the NLA Hams Net. My name is Terry from Colorado. My call sign's KI0RE. On this net, we talk about things that are NLA-ish and Hamish, and either one or both. And I welcome anybody's contribution that wants to talk at any time. Just start talking, and I'll pick up on it. Unfortunately, this last week, I've been laid on my back quite a bit, so I'm still a little bit off in the way of my voice and being able to conduct a net without coughing. I will try and spare everyone my coughs by hitting my mute switch whenever I feel it coming on. So if I drop out for about 10, 15, 20 seconds, you'll know why. Shall we continue on? We are on the AWRL Ham Radio License Manual, 3rd edition, Level 1 Technician. And we've been going through the book, and we're in the back on how to choose your, or choosing a ham radio, how to choose your equipment once you become a ham. It's a good thing to go through, and I really would have liked to have heard all these things had I known about this chapter, and I'm not so sure it existed back then, 20 years ago when I got my license. But I was on the same book, only the 20 years ago edition. We're up on page 15, and we stopped where it starts talking about HF equipment. So I thought we'd have a little chat about HF equipment. Before I get started, are there any questions or anything? Everybody's had a good time, I'm sure. And if there's any questions, please call now. That sounds like somebody hammering on a keyboard. I thought somebody wanted to ask a question. The HF or shortwave bands are important because of their long-range capability. When HF conditions are favorable, contacts around the world are possible without the need for repeaters or the use of internet-based systems, such as IRLP or Echolink. The traditional amateur HF bands, including 160, 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10 meters, which is 1.8 megahertz to 29.7 megahertz. In the early 1980s, the 30, 17, and 12-meter bands, 10, 18, 24 megahertz, were added and are sometimes referred to as the work bands. And it's WARC, but a lot of people call it work. They just swallow the A. In reference to the World Administrative Radio Conference at which frequencies are allocated, the 60-meter band, 5.5 megahertz, was added more recently. Many models of transceivers are available for HF bands, and there is no limit on the different options and size, and there's just a great variance out there. And whether you're talking about new equipment or old equipment, there's definitely a function or franchise or a faction. There's a faction of hams that like to use only the old stuff and keep it going. Like the old Hallicrafters, the old Collins radios, these are all good radios, and you'll find that it's tough to beat the nice, clear sound of a well-tuned tube radio. But tubes, of course, are a little bit more fragile, and they do wear out over time much quicker than some of the solid-state radios. Isn't always true, but on the whole, solid state's going to last a lot longer. But they have different sizes and different coverages. They all come with the small ones especially with about 5 to 100 watts. Sorry about that. The 5 to 100 watts. That means you can run kind of like a QRP flat-footed so that you're getting a good signal at your antenna and you're trying to make long-distance connections with only 5 watts. And 100 watts because that's kind of the baseline of where you can get really long-distance contacts. And everybody's heard the story about it. I made a contact with a guy in Russia in the Ukraine. And he could hear me. I could barely hear him. I think the entire reason I made it was because I had 100 watts going out, and he had a huge antenna array and a much bigger radio than I had. At about 100 watts, you start getting up to some heavier desktop equipment that will run a lot hotter, but also you start having a bifurcation here. 100 watts is about the minimum that a lot of these linear amplifiers that are perfectly legal in ham radio, if they're tuned properly and not emitting any spurious signals. But one of those big amplifiers like that, you might put out 1,000 or 1,500 watts, but it takes 100 watts to drive it. So the little portable ones that maybe set up on a desk or they'll go in your car, they will drive something like that if they can hit 100 watts or whatever the input power requirements are for the particular amplifier that you're using. And that's what a lot of guys do because they want to get out and they want to get around and they want to have talks on networks that perhaps go on at times when they need that kind of wattage to make it around the world. Mobile radios are intended to be operated in a vehicle, but they can make an excellent base station radio, and that's what I did, especially if you have limited space. Those radios consume somewhat less current than fixed station radios when not transmitting. This may be important if you intend to use radio for emergency communications and expect to be operating on a battery power occasionally. If not used in a vehicle, a DC power supply will be needed. And that's one of the first things I did. I got me a switching power supply. It's sitting here about an arm's length away, and I could turn it on anytime. And it's got a great big old three sets of power takeoffs, four sets, I guess. I forgot there was two of one certain kind. And each of those is fused, and each of them will provide 12 volts at whatever amperage is needed. And I think this thing goes up to about 35 amps. And I've watched it drive my HF radio, keying up on Morse code, CW, continuous wave. You can watch the ham meter on the thing flip rather a long way. Yeah, go ahead. Who's it?
Yeah, just a comment. When I was looking around for a good DC power supply for the house, for a base station, I ran across a bunch of recommendations, and one of them was that this Kenwood was a great one, blah, blah, blah. And so without really thinking about it too much more, I bought one. But there are some out which have meters on the front for both voltage and current, variable voltage, variable current, and they can make a great power supply for 100 other things. So if you're going to buy a DC supply for your base unit, I would recommend not buying just a fixed 30-volt whatever amp or 15-volt 30-amp rig. Go buy one with a bunch of meters. It's much more versatile. You can even charge your car battery if you have to with it. That's all I have.
Well spoken, Jan. I neglected to inform everybody that. I have an Alemco. It's an Alemco DM34... OMV, and it's got variable voltage that you can adjust, and a fuse on this front, and I've watched it as I've sent Morse code, and that amperage needle goes right with when I put that key down, and it's a lot of fun to watch. And yeah, it's got takeoffs on the front of it, so you can power just about anything. And I have. I've done little circuit tests that I wanted to do where I needed 5 volts. My tang got tangled. When I needed 5 volts and or 6 volts, and I didn't have any batteries on me at the time, so I stripped a little bit of wire and ran a wire over and dialed up 6 volts, and then I could watch the current that the thing was the circuit under test was using. Works really well for a lot of different things. You're absolutely right, Jan. Thank you for that. Radios for base stations are available in many different price ranges because of the great differences in performance. And the top end, we're talking, you can get into to the multiple thousands of dollars. It is quite common to have a large base station type HF radio run you $3,000. It's quite common to see one that maybe requires twice that amount of cash to buy. I'm not in that rarefied air. I work down at the very basic level, and I got my first HF rig. I paid $1,000 for it, actually $980, I think it was, at a ham fest because the guy had died, and it was in another ham was selling it for the widow, and he got good money out of it, and I didn't mind because it was a really good radio, and I fell in love with it. As a matter of fact, I think I saw a picture here on page 17 at the bottom, the Kenwood TS-590S transceiver. I have a couple of models back, about I think a 570 or maybe a 540. I can't remember the exact name, but that's roughly what mine looks like right there. I have a little bit different front panel than that because I have an older version of it, but that's roughly the radio that I had for the longest time and I've been off of for quite some time. So anyway, back to this. High-performance receivers have better selectivity and strong signal performance, as discussed later. Some radios even have two receivers. It is normally best to start with a basic radio and develop a feel for what is important to you. Everybody listens just a little bit differently. Everybody transmits just a little bit differently. Everybody has a different setup. If you've ever been on QRZ.com on the Internet, you can see what some people's ham shacks and radio setups look like. And it's amazing the diversity of each of those. They build them for what they want to do and when they want to do it with the space and the funds that they have. And you see a lot of guys out there and gals, too, that have expended a lot of time in developing their workbench, and they've got a beautiful workbench that holds their equipment perfectly, and they have room for development, and they love it. And once you put something into it like that, it's just all kinds of fun to make contacts using the equipment that's right in front of you. Ah, it's beautiful. Okay, on page 16, there's an HF glossary. I'm not going to go through all of that. I leave that for the student here or the new ham to kind of think about all of that. But I will go to page 17. It says frequencies and modes. Commercially available HF transceivers cover all the amateur bands described in the introduction to this section. Some add the 6-meter band from 50 to 54 megahertz, and even VHF-UHF bands. You see a few of those, but I'd say on the whole, you don't see that as often as you see just an HF radio. These radios are all mode using AM, single sideband, Morse code or continuous wave, FM, and digital modes. And that's the difference between mine and a lot of these newer ones is a lot of the digital modes They may have been invented back then, but my radio was already 5 years or 6 years old before I got it. So didn't have any of that stuff in there. A lot of it never been heard of when I got to it. The new DMS type stuff and the digital radios that send all kinds of extra stuff. I don't know. I haven't seen one of those yet. I would tend to think they need to be up on the UHF and VHF bands to be able to do that. Anyway, they use all the modes. You can use these radios for everything from contacts on your local repeater to long-distance contacts in the HF bands, where single sideband and continuous wave are the most popular modes. The ARRL operating manual, look on the ARRL.org website/shop. Discuss the characteristics of different HF and VHF, UHF bands. One thing I did notice as soon as I got that HF radio, I started doing more shortwave listening because the discriminator circuits on common radios, with the exception of maybe that really pretty Grundig and their equipment, on a lot of radios, unless you get up into the $250 to $500 range, the discriminator circuits inside of those HF radios, like that little thing I bought last year, or year, 2 years ago now, they're just not as good as the circuits inside one of these HF radios. And that's what really counts. That's what you're buying. If you buy an HF radio already built, the longer wavelength HF bands, 160 to 30 meters, are generally used for local and regional contacts through the day, but support long distance DX, and that's what DX means, is long distance contacts at night. Shorter wavelength bands, 20 to 10 meters, open and provide long distance contacts through the day, but close at night when the signals are no longer reflected back to the Earth by the ionosphere. The VHF and UHF bands support line-of-sight regional contacts, especially if you have mountains like I do. Gloat. This is called weak signal operating because and is conducted at 50, 144, 432, mostly using single sideband. So what they're trying to do is get away from FM and use on the UHF, VHF bands, one of the other modes like single sideband or even Morse code, and you can do that. They work better at low signal-to-noise ratios, while FM requires stronger signals to be effective. And that just makes sense. You're doing a lot more in modifying the waveform a whole lot more when you're running FM, period, as compared to single sideband and even AM sometimes. So it's good, especially code. Code, it's either there or it's not. And the modulation of the radio is the modulation on that key. While able to transmit only in the ham bands, HF radios typically include general coverage receivers that can tune from a few hundred kilohertz to 30 megahertz. Medium wave MW stations are frequencies from 300 kilohertz to 3 megahertz. And long wave below 300 kilohertz. Ham band only receivers don't offer this coverage. Wideband receive coverage extends about 30 megahertz into VHF and UHF range. So if you're looking for these terms, wideband receiver and long wave and midwave, MW, LW. The Wikipedia entry on shortwave, and it has a website there, will give you an idea of what you can listen to. The VHF, UHF section on frequency coverage will help you decide if wideband receive is useful for you. Then it talks about power input, power input and output. Transmitter output power of the HF receivers range from 100 to 200 watts, nor typically, with most between 100 and 150 watts. The extra power will not make dramatic difference on the air. However, power amplifiers, aka, and this is what I was talking about, linears or linear amplifiers, are available to increase the power
Did I lose the call or did... Terry, looks like we're not hearing you. At least I'm not. Are you muted, Terry? Terry. Can you hear her, Dan? Terry, I cannot hear you.
Yeah, I just got back in on my cell phone.
Oh, okay. I'll read you loud and clear now.
Okay, my regular telephone line, my VoIP line, just went south. All of a sudden, I had a dial tone, and so I've been trying to get back. Sorry about that.
Something, we're waiting.
Where did I leave off?
Oh, about a minute ago, whatever.
Okay. 600 to 1,500 watts is what a linear amplifier produces, but it takes 100 to 150 watts, usually, to power a linear amplifier. Anybody got any questions so far? Okay, beginning HF operators will have the most. I'm still on page 17. I'm about to turn. The last sentence says beginning HF operators will have the most success using power levels around 100 watts running barefoot. And barefoot means without an amplifier, without one of those great big hefty duty amplifiers. And I want to take a side note here. A lot of guys will buy old AM station radio station, public radio station, amplifiers, final outs, transmitters, and they'll modify them. They'll first go in there and redo all the capacitors and then do a lot of computations on the new bands they want to use it on and make adjustments and get it tuned up the way that it needs to be and then provide the power supply. And then they'll run this big AM station, and they just think it's so cool. I think it's cool. It's these things are usually the size of a couple of refrigerators, and they stand in the corner, and they use lots of power. And it's mostly tube-driven, and they're a heck of a lot of fun to get going. I could tell you all kinds of stories there. But just look on the net. Look on Google or whatever your favorite access to the net is, and look for I use DuckDuckGo. Let's see, you look for AM transmitter conversions or something like that, and especially on YouTube, you'll find videos where they show you every little piece inside, and most of the, even though they're two big refrigerators or maybe one big refrigerator. A lot of that is open space in the back to allow cooling air to get back there through there. There might be a fan on top, and it's just fascinating. Guys who can do that are really good at, applying all this information that they've learned about electronics and radio frequencies and actually running through the formulas and coming up with what needs to be changed out and what they can keep. And they get pretty good at it. And I have a very big respect for many of them that they run these things out in the garage or out in their ham shack or even in the back room of their house. They have a whole bedroom devoted to this transmitter that's sitting there with a 220 wired to it. And they're just proud of them, and I think they should be proud of them. And when you hear a station like that up on there, it's a different ball game. They are just so pretty and clear and nice sounding. You'd be amazed. I would encourage anybody that can find that signal and listen to it like one of those, please do so. It's worth every minute you spend on it. Okay, back to the top of page 18.
Comment, Jerry?
Sure.
If you're really seriously considering going over your little 100-watt base station, you ought to consider that those linear amplifiers, if they're putting out 1,000 watts, they're taking 1,000 watts in from your house supply or whatever you got. 1,000 watts out of a car battery is a heck of a load. I mean, they're taking 2,000. They're taking 1,000 plus what they're putting out. So they're taking 2,000 watts to run. So you're probably out of car battery range, unless you got a good charger on them, and into a good power supply out of your house off your 110-volt line. Okay?
Yeah, thank you, Jan. Another very good point that I didn't think about, and you're absolutely right. If you're going to put out 1,000 watts, you're probably not going to be driving it off of a single 12-volt car battery. You need to have a good supply line coming in for something like that. And these big transmitters that used to be AM radio transmitters, broadcast transmitters, you don't even get anywhere. A lot of them come with a power supply next to them that you've got to hook directly into the 220s mains to get it to work. And it takes and gives you a pure sine wave out with nothing on it but just power. And that's kind of what it takes to drive one of those. So anyway, more power provided by amplifier. More power provided by an amplifier will extend your transmit range, enable you to maintain contact longer as conditions change, but adds significant expense and raises demands placed on station equipment. Lower power, or QRP, if you look at the Q codes, QRP means should I decrease power, increase power, and it's QRP usually means you're running 10 watts or less. Typically, it's 5 watts or less. It's something you can try and gain experience on, because what it does when you operate QRP is it develops your skills as a ham radio operator. And so you're inking out, you're squeezing your feed line, get a better feed line, get a better cut on your feed line, get a better antenna match, get a better antenna overall. You're working on the things that really give you a better signal, and it makes you a better ham when you do that. So if I could suggest a way that some of you might consider going, is use what you learn about electricity and what you have in the manuals and what you can learn online. Get the best antenna. Develop the best antenna and the best feed line and the best power supply with a decent radio, and run it at QRP and see how well you can do. And then go up if you think you need to. You'll have a lot of fun that way, and you'll sure learn a lot about communications. A radio with a built-in AC power supply does not need an external DC power supply. Most radios do require an external DC power supply, though. Be sure to select a power supply that is rated to continuously, and I can't stress that word continuously more than that, continuously provide the maximum current specified in the radio's manual. Because most radio accessories operate from the same voltage as the radio, 13.8 volts for most 12-volt systems, it is wise to add a few more amperes of current output power to power them. For example, if a radio requires 24 amps at full power, choose a supply that can deliver 30 amps. And that's why I picked the Elenco I did, because I needed about 25 to 30 amps, and this one developed 35, and I haven't been disappointed whatsoever. It was a big expense at the time. I want to say one thing. There's a lot of, in the beginning, switching power supplies, which it kind of does some voodoo about switching your plus and your minus, so that it's actually driving a half wave and then the half wave in the opposite polarity. And that's how it develops a full wave signal or full wave power that it delivers to the machine, a full wave AC. In the beginning, they weren't very good. Nowadays, they've gotten much, much better. They got better filtering on them. And so what it says you're going to get out of it is a lot closer to what it was when it first came out. So when you're looking for a power supply, be careful, be wary about some of them, and just know what you're looking at and how well it delivers. Talk to hams; they can tell you that one's a piece of you know what, and that one is sweet. I don't care how old it looks. You buy one of those, I'll pay twice for it to buy it from you. So watch for them at the different ham fests you go to. Anyway, excuse me. Filters, I'm still on page 18, filters and receiver performance. This is what makes it a whole bunch. It gives the radio that selectivity, even more selectivity, that maybe you don't have on a little desktop receiver alone. The HFNs are a challenging environment for receivers. Signal strengths vary from barely detectable to extremely strong. The bands are often crowded with strong signals. The most important receiver characteristics are selectivity, the ability to reject unwanted signals, and strong signal performance. Selectivity is created by filters with different bandwidth suited to the signal's mode. You'll encounter radios that use discrete electronic crystal filters and software-based DSP, digital signal processing filters. HF radios that use discrete filters will come with a medium bandwidth filter for single sideband, about 2 kilohertz. So an AM filter, 6 kilohertz, and an FM filter, 15 kilohertz. CW filter, 500 hertz, or a RATTY, RTTY. That's a radio teletype filter, 250 to 300 hertz, are needed if you expect to use those modes a lot. Filters can also be added after you purchase the radio. And that's a good question to ask. What filters are already in the radio? Because a lot of these radios, they sell you the radio at one price, and the filters are $50 a pop, and when you go populate it. And so if it's got all the filters in it, it's a much more valuable radio than if it doesn't have any filters in it when you buy it. DSP filters are created by software on the radios controlling microprocessors, reducing or eliminating the need for separate electronic filters. The radio will come pre-programmed with several common filter types. You can create new filter types and even adjust them while you are using the radio. The radio's ability to operate properly in the presence of strong signals is measured primarily in two ways: blocking dynamic range, BDR, and third-order intercept point, TOI or IP3. In both cases, higher figures are better. BDR in decibels describes the receiver's ability to ignore unwanted signals. TOI in dBm, a power level, described a receiver's reaction to multiple strong signals. A difference of 6 dB or more represents a noticeable change in performance. While commercial transceivers have adequate strong signals performance, the more you expect to operate on HF, the more important these figures will become. Then the ARRL product reviews, it kind of gives a plug for them there. And you can look in QST magazine to see those. Four other features help a receiver reject interference and other unwanted signals. Having these controls in the front panel is very useful, and I agree with that 100%. Receive incremental tuning, RIT, sometimes called a clarifier, changes the receive frequency without affecting the transmit signal. A passband tuning or passband shift controls where the receiver's filters are tuned relative to the main receive frequency. This allows you to reduce off-frequency interference without changing the receiver's main tuning frequency. Notch filters, oh, I love notch filters, can reduce interference appearing as continuous tones, not uncommon on HF bands. Why? Because you might be physically located between two transmitters, one 1,000 miles that way and 1,000 miles the other way. But when it gets to you, they're on nearly the same frequency, and it generates a side tone because every combination of frequencies, you get the sum, the difference, and of each, plus whatever, what are the four tones now? I've talked myself into a hole. Gan? it's the two sums. When you got any two frequencies mixing, you get four output frequencies. Oh, that's what you get. You get the standard, the original frequency one, or original frequency two, the sum and the difference. That's what I was trying to say. Okay, thank you for the backup. I appreciate that. Notch filters allow you to say, I want to get over that guy, and I don't want this guy interfering, so let's notch this out and move just to the side of him and not let anything quite up a little higher where I'm hearing that other guy. You can do a lot of things with notch filters, and they're getting better and better all the time. A noise blanker suppresses impulse noise created by motors and vehicle ignition systems. And if you live next to a freeway, you know what I'm talking about. If you live next to some big heavy-duty power lines, you know what I'm talking about. If you have an old refrigerator in a garage to keep your beer cold, you know what I'm talking about. I used to get it from the buzzer on the dryer. When that thing would go off, it made the ugliest noise on my radio. And so I eventually had to replace that buzzer because of contacts. The contacts were getting corroded. It was still working, but there was enough noise coming off of it that it was interfering with my HF receiving. Digital signal processing. How much time we got? We got about 6 minutes. I hesitate to just jump right into that at this late day. But it does talk about DSP. Are there any questions or any topics that somebody would like to cover? Call now.
I was just glancing back through, and a lot of those 100-watt amplifiers, they take about 13 volts and 24 amps. So it comes out that they're not even 50% efficient. If you're going to go buy, you know, some of those little radio stations are 1,000 watters, 3,000, 5,000 watters. If you're buying a 5,000-watt station, you might have to have a 15,000-watt AC line coming in to support it. And you're right, it's going to be a big 220 off the mains power supply.
Well, a lot of times, even if they're 10K transmitter, the hams will throttle them back to where they're only doing 1,000 or 1,500 watts. All right, go ahead.
What is the maximum for ham on the extra license? Is it 5,000?
1,500, I think, is the top.
It's what, 1,500?
1,500 watts, I think, is
the top. Yeah, I think you're right.
And I'm not looking it up because my head doesn't like looking it up right now.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay,
so if you want to radiate a large amount of power, you better be able to pay the power bill.
Yeah, you're going to feel it, huh?
Yep, you're going to feel it.
Okay, anybody else? Oh, go ahead, Jan. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to
cut you.
You
might dim the lights when you key it.
I have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody else have any experiences they'd like to relate, like to share? Okay, and there's a real good graphic at the page on page 19 at the bottom, figure 9, that shows what can happen and what you're trying to do. And it shows a signal with, you know, you're always going to get, anybody who's looked at a spectrum analyzer knows that when this signal comes up, it's not just the signal in a single straight line. It's the signal, and there's all kinds of little orphans, harmonics to the right and the left that come along with it. And it's various things that happen. And the more you eliminate those things, and that's what we're talking about. When you go fix your antenna, you knock down all the spurious stuff that your feed line is picking up and shouldn't be. Or your ground. Your ground is picking it up because there's a high voltage wire that parallels your particular pipe for 100 feet. And so it tends to pick up all kinds of things that the 250,000 volt high power line picks up. There's just a lot can happen. The notch filter gives you a chance to just to pick your desired frequency and ignore all the other stuff. And so I like that picture. Okay, I think we're going to knock it off there unless anybody else has a comment they'd like to say.
Looks like that's good.
Okay, hearing none, then I'll go ahead and close the net. This has been the NLA Hams Net for 10 January. 2018. My name is Terry from Colorado. My call sign is KI0RA. We talk about things NLA-ish and in Hamish. This net is held every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And anyone is welcome to contribute. You don't have to be a member of the NLA. You just chime in. You don't even have to be a ham. You can just ask questions and talk. We're here to help you understand and hopefully get your license. And thanks, everyone, for the input. We appreciate being here, Robert, and we appreciate all your excellent comments, Jan. And I'm going to now close the net. So have a great one, everyone. See you later.
Goodbye. I'm going to shut down the net now.